let's take a half step back. The church did their homework and Steven Spielberg did not.
Oh no.
We bend your ear. Stories about us.
Stories about you.
Huck Finn, Peter Rabbit. This is Earbender.
Oh yeah, Earbender.
I'm your host, Alexi. Welcome to Earbender. Hey!
Hey!
This episode, we're talking about Catch Me If You Can. Well, what if it was all a lie? What if it was all made up? What if it was a movie about the con men that's conning was all a con?
Two mirrors facing each other.
It's super interesting and perplexing. Also, we're going to talk about being nice.
Oh.
Might be a bigger attribute than you think. You know when you're talking about someone, I don't know, they're nice, but they're a fringe part of the movie that is your life. Maybe this movie we're going to talk about will change your perspective on niceness from a little attribute to something essential. But now, without further ado, the lady that took a big leap and switching over from chicken burritos to El Pastor yummy tummy burritos, your friend, my lover, Bo!
Hello, everyone. Hi. It's true.
That was big.
That was. Oh, man.
That switchover. And
you've
it was.
Been, it's for- you've been singing the praises of El Pastor the whole time I've known you. And, like, I've had a nibble here and there. But then you're right. You're right.
That's what it's all about.
Chicken's lame.
Yeah. You know what I'm figuring out, Bob?
What's that?
We, everyone we come in contact with, are all scared babies.
That's a broad statement.
When Bob and I travel to different countries, we see so many different people, especially older people, with resting bitch face.
Oh, yep. Yep, yep.
Have you heard that term before? They don't look approachable. They look very angry, but that's just how their face rests.
Yep, yep.
When we're traveling around, we need directions or have a question about language or food. We have to ask somebody. And you see a person's face brighten up. And actually, it wasn't as bad as you thought. And they were just zoning out. They weren't actually angry.
Giving you the 20-yard stare.
Right, absolutely. I'm realizing it's not just international. It's here, too. Mm-hmm. Everyone has resting bitch face. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a facade of being unapproachable. I just don't notice it as much because I don't need to come out of my comfort zone and ask anyone any questions because I know how to get to Piggly Wiggly without anyone's help.
Sure.
Yeah. How I'm coming to this realization recently is if you're walking around with like a dog or a baby or a shirt that says something funny, it opens up people in a way that saying hi doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, if you're hanging out with a dog, people respond to the dog because they always know what to do. There's no barrier to entry.
Absolutely.
There's no onion layers to pull back. No special way of conversing to unlock. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The dog is always going to respond well to whatever you do, and you feel more confident. But once they open up, then I could jump right in and talk to them because their confidence is high, and I'm ready to do the heavy lifting to foster conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But man, oh man, everyone is willing to talk when they don't feel they have to protect themselves and be nervous and get awkward in a situation because we're all scared babies. You know?
Sure.
But we've been there.
On which side of it?
We're usually the ones that are like opening up other people.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we have resting bitch face too and just don't know it.
But I'm saying that we've like unlocked the key on how to open up other people.
Sure.
But I hear what you're saying, and maybe I should put myself in other people's shoes and I should not have resting bitch face as well.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm not a smiler? You think I just kind of like frumpy frump all around town?
No. But I have seen you when you're on a mission.
Yeah.
You're scary. Because I know in your head, you're like, I'm just going to run into the grocery store and buy these two things.
Right.
But then anyone looking at you would think that you were like an assassin.
Get out of my way.
You're an assassin in the wrong locale. But I think, you know, you're right. Especially when people give you that little bitty door, whether it's t-shirt, baby, dog, then you can get in there a lot easier.
Yeah. I'm like, friends? France? You want to be France?
Actually, I think sometimes for you, that crutch of the thing gets in the way. Where you're like, I don't actually want to talk to your dog. I want to talk to you. But by addressing your dog first, that warms you up.
So, right.
You know your audience.
I'm upset that that's how it has to happen. But I'm happy that it happens altogether.
Yeah, you'll take it.
Bob, are you ready to see what the algorithm brought us?
Yes.
Since robots choose what I see, let's see what the algorithm brought to me.
This is Let's See What the Algorithm Brought Me. It's the part of the show where we spin a fake wheel and talk about anything from movies to YouTubes, from TikToks to music to Instagram ads. Spin the wheel, Bob! Aluminum linoleum.
Aluminum linoleum, aluminum.
That was a quick spin.
Yeah, it's a little tiny wheel.
It's been more. Anyways, it must be a giant wheel.
The movie Banshees of Inisherin. Can't we just be nice?
Yes. Bob, we saw the indie movie that had Colin Farrell in it, and I'm pretty sure only 8 people saw it. This is a black...
That's not true. It's like Oscar nominated.
No. No. This is a black tragicomedy.
Yeah,
I've never heard of that mix before. It's a comedy, dark and tragic. It's like when you're a kid and you quote unquote cook for the first time. You just put like milk and soda pop and M&Ms in a bowl and you dare your friend to eat it. That's what a black tragicomedy sounds like to me. They just threw a bunch of stuff together.
That is not a new genre at all.
There's like a joke in that movie and they're like trying to say that it's a black comedy.
You were the one that told me that it was funny.
So it's called Banshees of Inisherin. Totally sounds like Banshees of Ed Sheeran. And if you hear it from like an Irish person, it sounds like that's what they're saying.
Inisherin.
So it doesn't. Hello, I'm Ed Sheeran. That's amazing.
That was A+.
That was so horrible.
That's exactly what he sounds like.
Bob, I'm going to explain this movie to you right now. Everything is a spoiler, but don't worry. No one's ever going to see this movie. Are you ready?
Oh, my God. Okay, spoil it for me.
It's more interesting in 5 minutes than in 2 hours. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I kind of want to talk about the power of being nice. How important it is, you know? Small town, Ireland, 2 buddies, Colm and Padraig. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to know. Day one, Padraig goes over to Colm's house to pick him up for the pub. As they do every day, Colm doesn't come out. Padraig goes to the pub on his own. Colm gets to the pub, ignores Padraig, and Padraig is like, what's going on? And Colm's like, you're boring. I don't want to be your friend anymore.
Ouch.
Day two, like that's it. Day two, it's April 2nd, and Patrick's like, oh man, that's the confusion. Yesterday was April Fool's Day. That's all it is. Oh, Colm, you silly goose. Colm says, nope. Sorry for being harsh, Patrick. I'm so sorry, but please leave me alone. I don't want to be your friend anymore. Day three.
Oh boy, really.
Like, this is the show.
Yeah.
This is the show.
Got it.
Patrick was taken back again. The movie makes it obvious that these guys get together every day in a pub for years, for hours at a time.
Yeah.
Patrick is pissed. The next day, he loses it and says, you're being stupid, Colm. Stop it. And Colm's like, Patrick, I'm getting old. I want my legacy to live on. So I'm going to write a song on my fiddle and I have no time to talk to you. I'm just going to fiddle. Which he never told Padraig he fiddled until now. And then he says, Padraig, because Padraig's like giving him some like backlash. If you talk to me one more time, I'm going to cut off my finger. He's like, what's happening in this show? This show is crazy.
Yeah.
Again, please, you don't have to watch it. You just have to listen to me. No one's going to watch this movie. Padraig's doing all the things that anyone would do. He's like kicking himself. Was I a bad friend? And everyone says like, no, Padraig, you're super nice. There's the nice. And Padraig's like, is nice enough? Somehow, some way, Padraig tells Colm, this is silly. We got to stop, buddy. And Colm talks to him, you know, and they kind of come to some realization. I don't know. Padraig's at home with his sister and his miniature pony. because this is the 1920s in Ireland. Uh-huh. Everyone has a miniature pony, apparently. And he hears like one knock at the door. There's no one at the door. There's blood on the door and a finger on the ground.
Oh, he did it.
He did it.
He did it. Got
he
off
didn't
his
know what
finger.
He said he was going to do. If you have a gun in the first act, you better fire it in the third act.
That's follow through.
Colm cut off the finger, threw it on the door, and walked away.
How's he even going to fiddle?
How is he going to fiddle?
With one less finger.
It doesn't even make sense. Podrick's trying to figure out how to talk to Colm without talking to him. So he has the priest talk to Colm in the Catholic confessional booth. He even tricks one of the guys Colm is fiddling with to go home because Podrick lies that his dad might be dead. And so now Colm has one less friend to fiddle with. Like, I guess that was a move. Podrick makes more mistakes and Colm decides to cut off all the rest of his fingers on that hand. It's not, and he throws them all at the door, of course.
Overreaction.
This isn't great for fiddling. His miniature pony ends up choking on one of the fingers and dies. It was the saddest part. It was the saddest part of the show. This is why you're not going to watch the show. This is why you're not going to watch the show. His sister moves to a different town. A friend kills himself after hearing that Podrick tricked the other fiddler about the dad thing. Mm-hmm. And Podrick burns Colm's house down. All this happens.
Really, really ramps up at the end of the movie there.
Because Podrick's not nice anymore.
Mm.
He's not nice anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He decided, okay, I'm too nice, mm-hmm. Colm. And then maybe that's not what Colm wanted him to do in the first place. Right? Sure. He just wanted to be left alone, obviously.
Yeah, Colm, you know, did say he was boring.
Right. I'm telling you all this to talk about the power of being nice.
Okay.
I feel we throw around the word nice when we attach it to a person's personality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like drinking a glass of water and talking to everyone about like how delicious the water was. Have you had water? It's so good. You know what I mean? No one does it. Well, sometimes it happens, right, but like it doesn't typically happen. We take it for granted. Podrick started sacrificing his niceness to win Colm's heart, and this small town started to fall apart because of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sometimes when the world is so big and it feels like you have to scream in order to be seen, it's nice to look at this small town as a model of what could happen if you're not nice.
Mm.
Less people, your niceness doesn't have to scream so loud to be tangible. And when you don't do it, everything starts to fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. They're on a tiny little island. You know, you're talking about how Colm and Podrick are best friends. And that's more out of necessity than anything else because there's only like 20 other people on the whole island.
That responsibility to be best friends. But even after Colm says, I don't want to be best friends, mm-hmm. it doesn't give you permission to stop being nice.
Sure.
To stop being your best self. Because there's more responsibility, not just to yourself, but then to the rest of society in some strange way.
Do you think that there is a line between manners and like what society deems acceptable behavior and niceness?
I think you should be true to yourself.
Okay.
Absolutely. We're not looking for societal niceness particularly and just keeping etiquette, mm-hmm. but we, you know, what you feel in your heart. You're putting yourself in other people's shoes,
sure.
and figuring out what they're able to handle and if you would like how you act towards them.
Sure.
You
know,
tricking people usually isn't all that nice. And then, of course, burning down a house isn't great either.
it's a step too far. So in the movie, Podrick suddenly becomes not nice. And that's kind of the beginning of the end, downward spiral. But at the very beginning is Colm saying, I don't want to be your friend anymore. Is that not nice? Is that its own special, unique?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I guess what I'm doing is I'm doing a study on Podrick.
Okay.
Because we could go into each and every single person and say how they could be better.
Okay.
For whatever reason, and I think you were feeling this way too when you watched it, that you're putting yourself in the shoes of Podrick. You're not in Colm's shoes.
It is definitely his point of view.
Right.
For sure.
Because everyone, you're listening to this right now and you're saying, your best friend just stopped talking to you.
Yeah.
You don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to Colm's house and figuring out why. We're
that's
going
true.
To Podrick's house and he's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Whoa.
Yeah.
You
that's
know?
A really good point.
And of course, the first like few days you're saying to yourself, there's no way it's me.
Right.
He's just having a bad day. He's got to be just having a bad day.
Temporarily lost his mind. It'll be fine. So you were talking about like the scale of niceness and that in a smaller community, the value of niceness is just higher because there's a greater reach, there's a greater impact. Is that kind of what you were saying?
So I feel like the scale of niceness is the same, but in a smaller community, you could see it a whole lot easier.
I agree with that.
So it's a perfect way to study niceness mm-hmm. in a small community, because it's not as random as who it's going to impact. The amount of being nice isn't going to hurt a stranger. You know everybody.
Right.
If something happens, everyone knows about it because everyone's in everyone's business at the right. same time.
That's why I would think that like the value of being nice is now suddenly higher.
Oh,
because
yeah.
you just have a greater reach.
I don't think it's a greater reach, but it's the value is higher because you know everybody.
Greater impact? Is that?
That I don't think so. I don't think it's a greater impact because it could still happen to a stranger. But what you're saying is the value for you, it's a little higher because you know everyone in the town.
Yeah.
So you're screwing over people you know.
Yeah.
So selfishly, it impacts you more.
Okay.
But it doesn't impact the world more if it was a bigger population.
Yeah. I guess it impacts your world, your tiny community world.
If anything, I mean, if we're like looking at a very small tower and a very big tower, if you make the small tower crumble, it's only a small tower. You make a big tower crumble by taking a brick from underneath. You know, you're making way more people screw.
I hear the distinction you're making. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do think that the, I don't want to say necessity of being nice, but the cost benefit analysis of being nice all of a sudden in a small town goes up exponentially.
Right. Personally. Right. Selfishly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I know, for sure. Let's be nice for selfish reasons.
Right. You're turning it back on you, which makes it,
That's a good enough reason, right. I think.
It's a good advertisement. Yeah. This is better for you, actually, too. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's important to be nice?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
In a general sort of way, big and small.
Sure. I think that's something that everyone would say.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it is one of the highest priorities?
You know what? In a weird way, because I think that niceness should just be the baseline, there's a part of me that wants to say, well, no, it's not a priority because it's not the highest goal. But
sure.
on the flip side, I believe that everyone owes each other a level of niceness. So now actually, yeah, that actually is kind of a priority, I think.
Yeah, so you feel like it is like water. Everyone takes it for granted, but no, we need water more than anything in
right,
the world. Like
yeah.
if you're stuck on a deserted island, that's one of the first things you say, like, do I have water?
Walking through a niceness desert, you'll notice. You'll feel it. You're like, oh man, I'm parched for a how you doing.
Okay, well, today I have a story for you. You ready?
Bring it on.
No guts. No glory. Gonna tell us a story.
So you know the movie Catch Me If You Can?
Yes, I do.
I think everyone knows this movie. I feel like Tom Hanks has a Q rating. Do you know what a Q rating is?
No.
No, you don't?
Q, uh-uh.
For real?
For real, yeah.
There's usually a list of like 1,000 celebrities.
Okay.
And they have a Q rating attached to them.
Okay.
That how much people like them. And why you want to know that is that's how much you pay them to be in your movie or commercial, depending on how high their Q rating is.
Two questions.
Okay.
What does the Q stand for, and who decides the rating?
I don't know. Beats me. Thanks for asking questions.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, not a lot of people do, because it's definitely for the industry.
Okay.
And one of the people that has the highest Q rating
is Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Oh, that totally makes sense.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so everyone's seen this movie, and I'm sure Leonardo DiCaprio has had it too. So Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
So Leonardo DiCaprio is the lead, playing Frank Abagnale. And here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is not true.
Oh, man.
It's like 95% not true.
But I heard like Terry Gross do an interview with the real Frank Abagnale. Like,
did she really?
I think it was her. Okay. It was either her or Diane Rehm.
Everyone's done an interview with this guy.
Oh.
So they're not alone. That makes a lot of sense.
But they were explicitly talking about the movie and like, oh, and then this thing happened. And Frank's like, yep.
If anyone doesn't know Catch Me If You Can, we're going to go through it really quick.
Okay.
Frank Abagnale poses as a doctor, as a lawyer, passes the bar in Virginia, was chased down by the FBI for years, ultimately arrested in a small town in France. It's an epic story. He stole $2.5 million in forged bad checks.
Ooh.
Excellent. You know, Tom Hanks gets him at the end. Leonardo DiCaprio is misunderstood as our Frank Abagnale lead. Yeah, absolutely. After the movie, Catch Me If You Can, came out, there was a lot of people wondering if anyone took the time to verify any of this.
Oh.
And it kind of toppled on top of each other because no one did.
Oh, no one did their homework?
Nobody.
Oh, boy.
The movie goes 1964 to 1969. He's 16 years old to 21 years old is how far along the movie goes. Okay. He was in jail most of that time. He wasn't out being a pilot and a lawyer and a doctor this whole time.
The movie does not reflect any jail time.
Right. Not until the very end. Yeah. You know? And he had like $1,500 in bad checks.
Oh.
That's about it. FBI didn't chase him down for years, but found him in a week and put him in jail. He didn't get arrested in France.
Very different.
He didn't get arrested in France at 21 years old, but he was arrested multiple times in America.
Oh.
Didn't pass the bar to be a lawyer. You can't pass the bar unless you went to law school in Virginia. Oh. It's impossible. Like, that's an easy one that you and I could have like looked on the internet and figured out.
That's the part of the movie that I was like, golly, that's amazing. Because like the Tom Hanks character is like, oh, Frank, the one thing I can't figure out is how did you cheat on the bar exam? And Frank's like, I didn't. I actually passed it. And I was
that's right.
And I was like, that's so impressive. Maybe I should go to law school.
Or maybe you could like take 3 weeks and become a lawyer.
Knock it out.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Well, that makes me feel better about not having gone to law school.
There are books and podcasts that have blown this wide open for years and no one seems to care. There's a podcast called Pretend, a true crime podcast about con artists. I implore everyone to go and listen to this. Okay. It's an 8-part series. I'm just going to talk about a sliver of it right now.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
This is very disconcerting because I obviously am aware of this movie, this person, and some of the other cultural context, and I have never heard that any of this was false until this very moment.
Right. I know. We're going to get to that.
Okay.
I'm kind of paraphrase quoting Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
Just meeting him, you could tell how he can pull the wool over your eyes. You know, like they're kind of building him up.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio. In talking with Frank, you realize things immediately. Even though he's one of the biggest bank robbers of all time, he really is genuinely a good person that's misguided. That was young when all this stuff happened. Wasn't like he was a petty thief in the sense that he would take the wallet out of an old man's pocket or try to steal something from a mom and pop store. He'd always go after the bigger corporations. He wouldn't steal from somebody personally.
That's a very Robin Hood-esque
tint to
this story.
And that's why everyone loves it.
Sure.
You know, when you look at like a Netflix thumbnail these days, go to your Netflix right now and check it out.
Yeah.
And then you see the thumbnails for the movies that you know, or go to Disney Plus or whatever, the picture is usually the villain. People love villains. People love the misunderstood villain that's just trying to get... Actually, you know, they're not that bad.
Definitely having a renaissance.
Right. The truth is, age 16, he wore a uniform, not a pilot uniform. He enlisted in the Navy. Why doesn't he tell people this? Because he was discharged 8 weeks after he enrolled.
Oh.
Right. Before the Navy, he was accused of ripping off a laundromat in New York.
That's a literal mom and pop.
Right.
That's like definition.
Right. And so he probably went to the Navy thinking like, oh God,
they're on
to
me.
Yeah, exactly. He tries opening up fake bank accounts and the bank notifies the FBI instantly and they catch him right away in a yellow Mustang, which he probably shouldn't have been driving. Because that'll show up.
Real inconspicuous,
right.
Frank.
Yeah, catch me if you... Oh, you got me. We're done. You know? Right.
Roll credits.
So he's 17. While getting his pilot uniform tailored, he was arrested again while going in and out of the uniform shop. There was like a stakeout. They were just watching him. And he was sentenced for 3 years for forgery in New York.
Because to get the uniform, you had to have like papers or something?
Absolutely.
Okay.
He had all the badges and identification for it.
Okay. Because I was going to just say, where can you just go get a pilot uniform?
I mean, that's where he was caught. He wasn't caught just because he was getting a uniform, but exactly, that he was showing all those identifications. Remember, the movie is from 16 to 21, but in truth, he's been in and out of prison the entire time. mostly in.
And also, apparently, he wasn't very good at forgery.
No.
He keeps getting caught,
and he keeps on doing the same thing. Okay. Yes. Oh, yes. Oh my yes. gosh. If you fall off a horse,
you gotta jump right back up. They'll never see it coming if I do the exact same thing again.
Who would be stupid enough to do it again?
Would be so dumb.
So here's the story, and this is kind of based off of that Grey's Anatomy, Meredith from Grey's Anatomy.
Uh-huh.
She was in Catch Me If You Can as a flight attendant.
Oh, that's right.
So it kind of is her. This lady, her name is Paula.
So Paula's real. Okay.
And she's a flight attendant from Louisiana. Frank has his uniform on. He comes on the plane. He has jump seat authority. He's right in the cockpit as a deadhead. Do you know what a deadhead is?
No, only people who fall around the Grateful Dead.
There's another. Well, man, when did the Grateful Dead come out? Oh, man. I don't 70s? Even know. It could have been the 60s at the same time, but no.
Oh, okay. Not that.
So if you're a pilot not flying and you want to get a ride for free, you could jump in someone's plane.
Okay.
And you're a deadhead. You're a pilot, but you're not flying. You're a deadhead.
Okay.
Frank had all the badges, bells and whistles of being a pilot. So Paula never suspected anything.
Okay. And it sounds like this was a common enough practice that that's not absolutely noteworthy in any way.
They expected him to be there for sure. Frank was charming and talked to Paula the whole time. Frank wanted to take her out for a steak dinner when they landed at 3 a.m. in Miami, but everything was like closed down. So they went to like a Wiener Schnitzel, which is like a hot dog stand, you know?
Instead of steak. Sure.
The steak of the people.
Yeah.
Really. He drops her off at the hotel and they go their separate ways. This apparently happens all the time as employees of flight. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You're running into people and then you're done.
I bet that still happens today. Just
absolutely.
Like that. Yeah.
Paula wakes up the next day later on and there's a message to get a package at the front desk. Get it out of our way. It's been sitting here forever. 2 dozen roses, 5 pounds of chocolate at the door. She's like, okay. There's a note from Frank saying, do you want lunch? And we don't pass up on lunch. No, we do not. Like Paula.
Get it, Paula.
He comes in a convertible. They had lunch. Then he just dropped him off at the airline. And he's like, can I have your number? And she's like, yeah, he was charming. You know, like, it was just so nice. Of course. She works for another day. Then she flies to Washington, D.C. And she gets off the plane. And there he is.
Whoa.
Why are you here? He says, my flight got canceled. Paula didn't even know how he found her.
Uh-huh.
But they hang out and she doesn't even think twice about it. Then she goes on another work trip for like 3 days, comes back to Washington, D.C., and he's there again. And they hang out again. He wears the pilot uniform every time. Like, that's all he's wearing.
He doesn't have a spare set of clothes. Right.
He pops up everywhere and he does grand gestures left and right to the point where Paula's like, this is getting creepy. Like, I can't handle this much anymore.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have like a great sense of people. She feels she's a young person and doesn't understand. And like, he smells really bad. And I was thinking to myself, like, it's probably because he wears the same uniform all the time. Right.
Yeah.
But her friends say that he's a gappo. Have you ever heard that before?
Uh-uh.
It's a gorilla armpit odor.
That's rough.
Right. And then she's like, you got to meet my parents. They go to like Baton Rouge, where she's from.
Whoa.
Right. But, and this, I know, I hear what you're saying.
Moving fast, Paula.
That isn't how she felt. And maybe this is like the airline way that you could go and fly over to the folks any old time. She's hoping that her mom is a better judge of character than she is.
Oh.
And like, she's going to like figure things out.
Okay. You know? So not come meet my parents, but more like, come pass this test.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
Because like, even though he's creepy, bagging a pilot is a big deal. A TWA pilot is a bigger deal. Like, Delta was a brand new company. TWA was the stuff that dreams are made of.
Look who made it.
Right.
That's funny.
So she shows them to the parents. The parents love them. Charming. Uh-huh. All fascinating. Right. Paul's like,
they fell for it.
I'm gonna break up with this guy. Like, she's completely done. And she's like walking out the door. They're about ready to leave. And mom says, Frank, if you're ever in the area, come and see us. I'll teach you how to fish. And like, he's never fished before or something.
Okay.
Paul is freaking out. Like, you like him? What's going on? This
her
is horrible.
Her plans backfired terribly. Right.
Well, she went there for a test, and I guess she made their decision on the way anyway. They didn't say anything bad about him until he got arrested. They loved him.
Until he got arrested.
Paula's mom called at one point, like, Paula, you're not going to believe this. And Paula's like, is Frank there? She's like, yes.
Oh,
well, tell me when he's gone, and then I'll come by. I told you, you shouldn't have invited him. There's something wrong with that guy.
Oh, no.
Right? She never actually dated him, she said.
Okay.
When I hear that, I'm saying to myself, like, okay, well, you probably fooled around a little bit and blah, blah, blah. She said she never held his hand.
Oh.
He's giving all these, like, presents. They're going over to her parents, but but they're not dating at all.
Oof. I'm not going to lie. I had a friend who thought we were dating, and it was a very similar instance.
That's on the friend at that point, right?
Well, I think
you're not leading him on if you're not even holding his hand.
I mean, we could get into it some other day, but that's what I thought.
Her family was open arms, you know, Southern hospitality. Frank is hanging out with the brother, the father, the mother. They're going to church together.
Oh, boy.
You know,
oof.
Frank is an opportunist, but like, I still can't believe this. Like, he starts living with Paula's family.
That is so wild. And none of them were like, gee, Frank, you're a pilot with TWA, and yet here you are living with these strangers.
They're probably just so happy to have him by, teach him fishing.
Oh, boy.
He would leave every few days in his pilot uniform and then come back.
All like, right, well.
He was sleeping in Paula's old room.
So I don't even like sleeping in my old room. That's weird.
He had a key and everything, except like her dad would like tell her about the smell. Like the smell was still a thing.
So that's not just Paula and her lady friends being petty.
No.
This is an issue.
It comes out that it was probably the smell of fear. You know, when you can like tell someone is like stressed out, it's like a pheromone that's released in their sweat. Like you could just like feel it.
I believe that 1,000%.
They study this in like scared skydivers. Like just before they like jump off the plane, they like test their sweat.
Oh, wow. I've had a few rough days at work. Where I'm like, oof, that's a little vinegary. That's a little, she's having a rough go. She's a little stressed. So I believe it.
What you find out, you know, now that we know all the information about him, he was just released from prison days before he met her.
Wow.
Right. And to your point, he's already tried this and failed. So he's super stressed out.
And then he has to like leave for a couple days to keep the con going. It's like, well, I guess I'll go sleep in the park for 3 days straight.
In my yellow Mustang.
All right. Oh my gosh.
It was a joke. Like Paula's dad was like, we're going to a restaurant, Frank. Get into the shower. And he'd come out and he would smell exactly the same.
Whoa. Right. Okay. That's definitely pheromones. That's not just like I went to prison and forgot about personal hygiene or something else.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Frank's going to church with the family and he's getting to know the priest and he wants to start a youth organization in Paula's family church.
Oh, Frank.
You know, he wants to make a career change.
Oh, Frank.
Frank, as any con person, needs to keep moving before anyone suspects anything because he can't live the lie forever. Paula's folks were sad to see him go, but he was going to move on to bigger and better things. You know?
The
church did some digging and called TWA, and oh my, he's not a pilot.
Let's take a half step back. The church did their homework and Steven Spielberg did not.
Oh, no.
Amazing.
No.
Good job, Southern Baptist Baton Rouge hometown church.
Then, like, TWA called the sheriff's department.
Narcs.
Right. You find out Frank was stealing Paula's dad's checks.
No.
Frank would take Paula's family out for like dinner and he would buy flowers for the mom, all with her dad's money.
Oh,
I know.
That
he stole
hurts.
From Paula's brother. Paula's brother was a bag boy at the grocery store.
Oh, come on. fine.
They were going to put him away for that, but the FBI already had him in jail for vagrancy for his pilot fraud stuff.
Oh my gosh. Right.
So he's in jail writing Paula's mother, sending her flowers, asking for help to get a lawyer with her money.
What? Leave her alone. That wasn't in the movie at all. Oh my lord.
He's no Robin Hood. There's no way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Paula forgets about this guy. She moves on. She has a family, kids. Yeah. She gets a call from her girlfriends. She goes, uh-huh. Your boyfriend is on TV. She's like, who?
I'm married.
Right. Frank. Like, he was on a show called Tell the Truth. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
That was in 1977. Tell the Truth.
So like a game show?
Yeah, it's a game show. They have a couple contestants and they're going after like three people that are telling the same crazy story, and you have to figure out which one is actually telling the story and which one's lying.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's about Frank Abagnale's life, and he's one of the three guys.
Got it. You know? Got it. Okay.
So how perfect is that? He has this crazy story. This mm-hmm. is perfect for the show. You know what I mean?
That's good TV.
And who hears about it from 1977? But Johnny Carson. So Johnny Carson has him on in 1978. Then Frank Abagnale writes a book in 1980 about his life story. Now it's kind of like Johnny Carson's put in the effort.
Yeah.
Everyone's put in the effort.
Oh, no.
Let's write a movie about this guy.
The aura of authority, and it's him telling his own story.
Over and over and over again. Yeah, absolutely. Paula, you know, messages whoever she can, saying, he's lying. And no one cares. No one cares what Paula has to say or whatever. All the evidence is out there in plain sight, but nobody cares. How do we know? Companies book Frank to speak at their conferences all the time.
Yeah.
No one's checking into it because Johnny Carson's cool with it. Steven Spielberg is cool with it. The guy who has the highest Q rating, Tom Hanks, is cool with it.
NPR was cool with it. Oh, no. I fell for it, too.
Everyone did, okay. For sure. There's a letter from Frank to Paula's mom, like 3 weeks after he was arrested back in the day. He says, I've been trying to write this, and I just can't. Please understand, I had no control over what I did. I love you all. The last thing I want to do is hurt you. I'll be sorry for the rest of my life. I have problems and I need help. The way I feel about you is no lie, but the rest was. Even though I'll go to prison, every cent that I owe you, I'll repay.
Okay.
Is that nice?
That's. I mean, did he? Did he repay them?
He never repaid them one cent. Frank's mother has a message to Reverend Underwood, the guy that he was going to make that youth organization through or whatever. Okay. Like, thanks for the kindness and interest that you've shown my son. He needs psychiatric help.
Oh.
Frank's mom is saying this. This is Frank's mom mashing Frank's legendary story into a million pieces.
How so?
Here we go. He's been in prison for 3 years, she says.
Oh.
That's the evidence right there. That's the catch me if you can story is an entire lie.
Oh.
She goes on, he came home and was writing checks a week later and another year in prison and then writing checks again.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean? Like, she's spilling all the beans right there in a letter. 17 years old he was, almost to 21 years old. He was in jail almost the entire time.
Oh, wow.
Those are such important years to figure yourself out, you know, just to who you are as a human being kind of gets like imprinted. It's easy to prove that he's wrong, but nobody wants to believe it. People listening to this right now may not want to believe it because you like the movie so much.
Sure.
You know, I like it too. It was
it's a very good story.
It's really well put together. There's so much heart attached to it.
Yeah.
Still not a bad movie.
Can't be based off of anything because it's not.
Right. You don't need to buy his book and you don't need to have him over to your company.
Yeah.
You know, Paula's mom has passed away now. And just like a year or so ago, Paula goes to a book signing for Frank. Yeah.
She confronts him.
Right. I wish I sat her down and we had like a better plan that she had, but it wasn't bad. What she did, you know, was perfectly fine.
Okay.
She's waiting in line and he totally notices her as per her. That's what she's saying.
Sure. Yeah.
Totally notices me.
She's still a babe.
Oh, absolutely.
Good job, Paul.
But he talks to her as though she's like a regular fan. And he says, I don't remember you. And asks, do you want like me to sign your book or what? And she says, yes. Write down, John and Charlotte, I am so sorry, Frank. And he does.
Ooh.
He writes it right down. That's as much as she's ever going to get, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that hurts.
It hurts.
That hurts. It sounds like she perhaps suspected that was all she was going to get.
Right.
Oh.
There's part of me that wants this movie. Wants this movie. I don't know what I want. I don't know if I want the meta movie that Catch Me If You Can came out and actually this is how it went. Or like this Paula movie is interesting.
Yeah,
or,
absolutely.
I don't know. I want it. I think there's plenty of story still in there. He's a guy that keeps on going to jail and like tries and tries again and just never does it.
He's just a con man over and over.
A horrible con man.
But is he? If he obviously got a lucky
break.
Now
we're going to define like what is a good con man.
I know, right? Like he obviously got a few lucky breaks and has literally capitalized on that. And then for whatever reason, the public psyche has just decided not, you know, they're going to plug their ears and hum when it comes to any fact checking.
You know, a lot of people talk about, this is a theme of this podcast, is following your dreams, right? You know,
you
follow your dreams, you keep your nose to the grindstone, you work really hard, and someday it works out. Sometimes it doesn't happen when you're 20. Sometimes it doesn't happen when you're 30, 40, 50 years old. There's like Ian McKellen is like a fun one. I'm sure he's not an unknown celebrity, but like he popped, became really big when he was like an X-Men.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, everyone has their time to wait. What you're saying is he a good con man? Do you have to like stay in prison in order to have everything that you've ever wanted? Is that worth it? Is it worth it to live a lie the rest of your days? Is that worth it? I don't know.
I mean, if his legacy is going to be the Hollywood story that he leaves behind, that's a pretty big success story, even though it's just a story.
Right. It's always your personal interpretation of what success is.
Sure.
But especially at that moment.
Especially that. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that would say, no, this is not success.
I'm sure Frank would be like, yes, it is. Nailed it. I'm not saying I agree with them. I just...
Right. I've never driven in a yellow Mustang.
If the con man's goal is to pull the wool over our eyes, he did it.
That's so funny. Before we get to the pop quiz question, please go to my Patreon page, The Cookie Crew. For extras from this podcast and many others and sneak peeks, sign up for my email list so we can chat. I love your recommendations for jingles and songs and what to watch next. I mean, I just watched the Banshees of Inisherin because of you guys.
Inisherin.
Was it?
Inisherin.
Yeah, Ed Sheridan. That's what I said. I said it perfect.
Nailed it.
Bob, you ready for the pop quiz question?
Pop me. Oh, no, let's not.
I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. This is a family show.
Pop me like bubble wrap. Pop.
What candy deserves to die a fiery death, Bob?
Whoa.
Here's the thing.
Okay.
I threw it through ChatGPT just to say.
Stop talking
no, no,
to
this
the
this is important. The robots have to know what we're doing.
Stop helping them.
And I said, like, what are the worst candies? You know? And they got me because they picked old-timey candies that no one cares about anymore. And that's not what I'm looking for.
Okay.
I don't want the old ones that aren't at checkout anymore. Okay?
Okay.
So, like, want to hear the old ones, though?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Black licorice. Which I think a lot of people can jump on board
with. Very polarizing.
Right. Even though, like, I remember watching this one thing on Instagram. I remember watching this one Dutch guy that was eating American candies and was showing everyone else his candies.
Okay.
It was a guy in Smule, actually. All of his candies were black licorice. It was just like different forms of licorice. You know what I mean?
The Dutch just never made it farther than
they don't
black
need to.
Licorice.
They know what they love. They know what they love. And like Americans were showing them like Reese's peanut butter cups.
Ooh.
Right?
They don't, that's a good
they
one.
They don't have Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oof.
It's like one of our favorite
that's so
ones.
Sad.
It's like number
that's
one or number two
one.
To Snickers.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. That's enough of that.
Okay.
Black licorice, obvious. Like circus peanuts.
I was gonna say circus peanuts.
I know.
Of course the robot read my mind.
Candy corn, that kind of hurts. There's a lot of like
that's seasonal. Get
corn.
Off.
Necco wafers.
Do they even make those anymore?
They definitely make those.
Oh.
And I was told, I never tried it, but they're exactly the same size as a quarter.
Oh, and you can like
you can use
them
for tolls.
I I have heard that.
Yeah. Oh, you could use it for like street tolls or whatever. and then wax lips, which...
Ugh.
Is that a candy?
No, you're not supposed to.
Why is it always at the candy store?
Don't
at the old-timey candy store. Okay, so what do you got?
I think we could do without jelly beans.
Jelly beans?
Jelly beans. Get rid of them.
All jelly beans?
All jelly beans.
Starburst jelly beans are delicious.
Oof.
They're so good. Wait. What about Easter? What you don't need jelly beans are the eggs for Easter. Because we all know that bunnies once a year lay eggs.
Lay jelly beans. Okay, you almost got me with the Starburst jelly beans. Those are good. But
they're so good.
If that means that I don't ever have to see any other jelly beans, it's almost like
when you have a jelly bean, you can't just have one because one jelly bean never tastes great. You almost have to like season your mouth with jelly beans, and then sooner or later, like, oh man,
it's a mess.
Jelly beans are a great time.
They have like a waxy hard outside, a gummy middle that gets stuck in your teeth.
More delicious.
All of the flavors are bonkers. They're not even close to.
The only thing is, there is a black licorice, and you can't. Everyone like sets those aside.
Oof, yes.
And the white ones.
Well, and then what's the brand Jelly Belly? They've run amok, and they need to be reined in. All of their flavors.
You don't like Harry Potter snot,
right? Like they went from like watermelon, and then they took it to kiwi, and then they took it to passion fruit, and then they took it to like sunset, and then they took it to western breeze.
I love how you went from like a jelly bean, which is already kind of like iffy, mm-hmm. to jelly bellies, which are delicious. Everyone loves those.
But they're wrong.
Have you had butter popcorn jelly bellies?
But they have.
Have
like,
you?
Yes.
They're great.
No, they are not. Oh, gross. Barf. No, thank you.
You don't know what good is. That's cool.
Aren't they also the ones that have like Thanksgiving themed ones?
Really?
Like stuffing and turkey.
That is so Willy Wonka.
No gasp. That's disgusting.
Well, like a gravy jelly belly?
Because you know what's amazing is I don't know if you've had potato chips lately that were like flavored, but chip technology is through the roof
right now.
I just had a dill pickle spicy chip.
Yeah.
So exactly what it tasted like.
And?
Amazing. 10 out of 10. A few years ago, I had a gyro Lay's potato chip.
Yeah.
Tasted like a ding dang gyro.
Was it good?
Well, they nailed it.
Right.
They did a good job.
Sure.
I guess I'd rather just eat a pita with some sliced lamb meat, but.
And I'd rather just eat Harry Potter snot. But I can't, so I have to have the jelly belly for it.
If I get rid of jelly beans, what are you going to get rid of?
Very easy. Hershey Kisses.
Excuse me?
They're stupid.
You?
They're the dumbest thing
they
in the whole world.
They are, but disagree on principle alone. They are dumb.
They're dumb.
They're so dumb.
They're so festive and so much fun.
Yeah.
They are so dumb.
But they got like the little flags, the little kisses.
Right. They take forever to open.
Oh, that's a fact.
You know how they say to you, buy a block of cheese and not shredded cheese?
Yeah.
The reason why they say don't buy shredded cheese is because there's like wax around each like shred of the cheese.
It doesn't melt as well.
It doesn't melt properly.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I feel about Hershey Kisses as well, is that like they're so small that there's even more wax per capita of kiss. You know what I mean?
Oh,
that you're not going for a bar. You're wasting your time anyway, and the bars aren't that great. Anyway, sorry, sister.
And then there's the one Christmas cookie, the peanut butter blossoms. That's not technically a Christmas cookie, but we only ever make it at Christmas time. And it's made with
those are delicious.
Those are amazing.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do with no Hershey's Kisses to go in the
middle? I'm willing to sacrifice that in order just to have them go away.
Oh.
Because all the other times that people find a way to put them in things.
Yeah.
Ugh. The worst. So when I say in things, I'm talking about in a bag of candy. And they say, oh, that's also candy. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not candy at all.
So this Christmas, your peanut butter blossoms are just going to have a little rectangle of Hershey's chocolate in them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's
that sounds delicious.
It. How about we just live our lives as though these two things don't exist anymore?
What are you talking about?
Jelly beans are dead to me.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
On where?
Earbender!